All right, I'm going to do kind of a Blocked and Reported-esque intro that will take us into the story. Wait, what's the date today? It is...
6th, right?
It is June 6th. You have it right. It's the week of June 6th. America is rocked from the fallout of the police and state murder of George Floyd. The once promising Bernie Sanders campaign is in flames. The Joe Bidenocracy is ascendant. Coronavirus is leaving a swath of death from coast to coast and across the world. Everything is on fire. There's literally not one good thing I can think of. And it's time for another episode of Blocked and Reported with me, Dan Logic Guy. And always, I have my friend, partner, podcasting comrade, Kyle. Kyle, how the heck are you?
I'm doing all right, all things considered.
The bad boys of podcasting have returned, and we are going off the grid, escaping from this insane world that is filled with questions of which we do not have the answers. And Kyle and I are retreating into an adventure into the unknown, to a mysterious world of irrationality and superstition called the Bridgewater Triangle. Give us a history lesson. What is this terrifying world of the supernatural that we're headed into?
Okay, so what I know about the Bridgewater Triangle. So, like, I grew up not too far from the Bridgewater Triangle, but
no,
I didn't
wait,
know...
Kyle, here, I'll be a good interviewer here.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you first hear about the Bridgewater Triangle?
When did I first hear about it?
Yes.
Nah.
I imagine it was hearing a tale from your half-Indian grandmother around a campfire, probably.
No, that's not true, actually. I don't have a half-Indian grandmother. Sorry to disappoint.
Okay, So you heard the tale from your non-half-Indian grandmother around a Catholic campfire.
Yeah. I was just lying. I have a half-Indian grandmother. And when I was a kid, I grew up not too far from Bridgewater Triangle. And so we had campfires every night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a rite of passage when you... turn 27 years old.
Right. That's a very important birthday when you turn 27 years old. That's really when you leave innocence behind.
Sure.
As we all know.
So on my 27th birthday, she said, there's this place called the Bridgewater Triangle, and it's a hotbed of cryptid paranormal activity. She had like a list that she pulled out. It was this like checklist. It had...
Was the checklist written in Native American papyrus script?
Yeah. How'd you know that?
You're painting a picture that's just vivid. It's like you're taking your memories and putting them directly in my head.
So maybe you don't need me to explain it, but then I will, just for our audience. It had, like, glowing orbs. It had phoenix birds. It had... it had Pukwudgie.
All our favorite Pokemon. I'll help you out with the list. It had giant snakes the size of stovepipes, thunderbirds, Native American thunderbirds that swooped down from the sky and carried away unsuspecting people, snatched right off the ground.
Yeah.
What else? UFOs, obviously.
UFO,
unfettered UFOs. What about Sasquatch? Do we have any Sasquatch sightings?
Oh yeah, there was Sasquatch. Yeah.
Good. You mentioned the Pukwudgies. We've got, I know what we have. We have, mysterious ghost hitchhikers that if you pick up them by the side of the road, then they murder you or something like
right.
that.
Right, and then it's sort of adjacent to that, it was like a subcategory on her list. It said gangland slayings.
Your grandmother was into some hardcore shit, man. Yeah, satanic killings abound all throughout the mysterious area known as Bridgewater Triangle.
Yeah, so I always had this very vivid picture in my mind of this place. This it had I had never been there for a long time, but I knew exactly what it looked and felt like.
In fact, it was you mysteriously forgot all about it until recently when vivid dreams crept into your head at the nighttime, and you said, "Where is this area? I remember this. I feel like I've been there before."
Mm-hmm.
Haunting.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, I'm not blessed with a cool half Indian grandmother who keeps a list of satanic gangland killings in her pocket for any such occasion. But I, on the other hand, first heard about Bridgewater Triangle, I don't know, like 2 weeks ago, when I was listening to an old episode, like 2017 episode of Last Podcast on the Left. And I was like, oh, Bridgewater, I don't know what that is. It's probably like the Bermuda Triangle. I'll listen to this episode. And imagine my shock when I found out that far from being out in the ocean somewhere, the Bridgewater Triangle is actually, according to Mr. Henry Zabriskie in this episode, located smack dab. This is how he described it. Smack dab in the middle of Massachusetts, the state I reside in. I was like, I mean, I could go take a day trip and visit this mysterious land of UFOs and puckwudgies. Jeez. And then I looked it up on a map, and I would say my response was one of jaw-dropping disappointment when I realized that the Bridgewater Triangle was about a 10-minute drive from where you and I grew up. Mm-hmm. Providence, Rhode Island. There was actually at least a year-long period of my life where I drove most of the length of the Bridgewater Triangle every day back and forth to work.
Yeah.
Literally every day.
Yeah. I had a job in the Bridgewater Triangle a couple years ago.
So it's like, it comes right up to, it just barely touches our home of Providence, Rhode Island, depending on how you draw the triangles. Different people put it in different places, but it basically, it's interesting because it comes like right up to like the Providence / Rhode Island border, like Attleboro type or Seekonk type of area, and then yeah. On the other end, it's like just short of like Fall River, and then mm-hmm. it's I don't know where to put the other dot. It's just sort of like halfway towards Boston, I guess. I don't really mm-hmm. know what's there. I think that actually that northernmost tip is actually called Bridgewater, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, it covers like the Taunton area. I don't know.
Yeah. If you were to just draw the triangle not much bigger at all, you would get Providence, Rhode Island, home of H.P. Lovecraft. Bam, right. Instant clout, right? Then yeah. Just a little bit bigger on the other side, and you've got home of America's notorious Lizzie Borden murders, Fall River. Bam.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Close. And then you gotta give it quite a bit more, but Salem's not that far off in that direction. So you could hit Fall River, mm-hmm. Salem, Providence, no problem. But they just yeah. sort of like kind of didn't do it, basically. They just kind of said, nah. They just sort of made it like a little triangle within the within that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all those places kind of already have their own claims to fame. You know?
You think that would be a plus, not a minus, don't you? You think that you could like mm-hmm. use the PR that already exists for those places already have their supernatural clout, so we can kind of use those and kind of build our story. But they sort of like kind of didn't bother, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of odd.
I mean, Salem seems to me kind of like a freebie, right? Like, I don't know. It seems like you're drawing the triangle. The triangle is arbitrary anyways. You may as well just go for Salem, right?
Yeah, you could extend it up. I mean, you could make it, why not make it the Bridgewater rectangle?
But I'm saying you wouldn't even need to make it you could make it the rectangle, that's true, but you could just move the, I mean, it's not that close to Salem, but like, it's just an arbitrary three dots anyways. Like, just put it a little bit more north and there you go. You got Salem. Everyone knows what Salem is. Immediately people are going to be like, oh, Salem, the witches. Okay. Oh, I know what that is. Is what I'm saying.
That reminded me that on my grandma's list that it also had Satanists.
Right, the infamous Satanist killers of Freetown, Fall River State Forest, where we are headed to as we speak en route yeah. to this evil mysterious area. So what the actual history of this paranormal hotspot known as Bridgewater Triangle is that in the 1970s, a kind of well-known cryptozoologist named Lauren Coleman, that's a guy, not a woman, it's Lauren as in lore, not like
Sarah.
Lauren Coleman. Lorne Michaels. Yeah, yeah, like that Lorne, yeah. Like Data's brother Lore, but Lorne. I feel like Lorne Michaels' name is spelled different. Hold on, I gotta stop. I gotta pull over by the side of the road and look this up, because it's gonna bother me. Yeah, it's Lorne. Yeah, no. So it's not like Lorne Michaels. Wrong. Mm-hmm. Incorrect, Kyle. Mm-hmm. It's got all the same letters as Lorne Michael, though.
Right. The E and the N are flipped.
Yeah, you flip them. So it's kind of okay. I'll give it to you. Partial credit, but not too much. Yeah, he wrote a book in the mid-70s called Mysterious America, which I have not read, but is, as I understand it, kind of like a paranormal travel guide through America. And he has a whole chapter on some corner of Massachusetts called, which he dubs, the Bridgewater Triangle. And this is the first mention of any of this stuff. He has coined the phrase, this is ground zero, print. This is the origin point. I am gonna say that the phrase Bridgewater Triangle originated from this book and had never been used prior, in print or out.
All right.
I mean, I don't want to disrespect your half Native American grandmother, who I'm sure heard tale of this passed down generation to generation, but I'm going to kind of call your grandmother a liar, to be honest. I think that Lorne Coleman coined this phrase in the 1970s as, you know, like a kind of marketing hook for his book, you know, like, you know, you're like, okay, here's a crazy paranormal area of America that you should visit. And if you just say, you know, visit Taunton, Massachusetts, no one's going to be like, ooh, sounds spooky. But if you come up with a name for it, mm-hmm. if you call it the Bridgewater Triangle, you know, everyone's heard of the Bermuda Triangle, right?
It sounds like it's like a spinoff or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the cool, badass younger brother of the Bermuda Triangle, I bet. That's what I thought when I first heard it. I was like, oh, this is going to be about some crazy place in the world where things go missing, I bet.
Yeah.
No, it is not. There are not any unexplained missings in the Bridgewater area. But I would say that if there was, yeah, go on.
I used to drive that. So they say that there are a lot of sightings along Route 44.
Mm-hmm.
That was how I used to get to that job. I mentioned it a few minutes ago.
How many UFOs and puck wedgies did you see en route to this job?
Unfortunately, I didn't see any.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Other than that, how was the job though?
Oh, the job was fine. It was pretty dry. It's pretty dry. It was office work, you know.
All right. Did I cut you off in the middle? Were you going to go? Were you about to say something about
private? No.
Cool, man. So Lorne Coleman comes out with his book, Mysterious America, and he's got a chapter on the Bridgewater Triangle, and he's got like a handful of anecdotes to flesh this out, right? He's got some unverified giant snake reports from an unnamed like a manual laborer of some sort. He's got a police officer citing a bird with a 12-foot wingspan. What else do we have here?
There was glowing orb.
There might have been some glowing orbs. He's got a handful of some very generic sounding urban legends about like ghost hitchhikers that pop up. He's actually has a fair amount of Indian folklore, because like especially in New England, but a lot of places in America, there was a lot of Indian activity.
Yeah.
There's a famous guy named King Philip, you know, this Indian chieftain who ruled over lots of land and then was, you know, driven out and killed by I don't know if he was killed actually, but driven out by the white man. So he's got a fair amount of kind of lore and fodder from that stuff. I believe there were actually a few high profile murders in the area at around that time that might have given him some stories. And then if I could say there was a centerpiece to all this, it was an actual, I would say, A+ UFO sighting that happened in the area around the time, which is, I consider A+ because the witnesses were too, it's not necessarily they're reliable.
Yeah, they're respected media personalities.
Respected media personalities who are willing to come forward under their own name. There's two of them, So it's not just one guy. And what they report is pretty impressive. Oh, also, I think it's notable that one of them was a former Air Force guy. So this is a guy who knows, who's seen airplanes. You know, he's been around airfields. He's seen airplanes. He's seen them take off. He's seen them land. You know, he knows. I don't know what his job was in the Air Force. He didn't say he was a pilot, but he's been around this kind of stuff. And what they see is they describe as a giant, Kyle, not a sports guy, but is it a pitcher's mound type of thing in the sky?
No, he said a home plate shape. Yeah.
Like a giant home plate shaped thing in the sky with a light on it, and it's gigantic. I think they described it as the size of 5 747s tip to tip, and it's low, so it's right over their heads by the side of the highway. The one guy said he could have picked up a rock and thrown it at the thing, and they see it for about, you know, a minute before it takes off. That's a good sighting. That in the UFO lore, that is a very good sighting. So A+ on that.
What did you think about their what they were doing at the time when they were interrupted?
Something about like they went to the dog tracks or something.
Yeah, they were on their way to the dog track, which is funny enough on its own. And then it happened, and then they still went to the dog track.
I mean, why would a UFO sighting deter some good guy time out at the dog track? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would have been suspicious if they didn't go to the dog track, if you ask me.
Yeah,
that's like a different generation of guys. Like, like what are you doing this weekend? Well, you know, me and my buddy, we're going to the dog track. All right, cool. I think I know a guy who might go to the dog track sometime. I think I have a coworker who might. I know he's into that kind of like gambling stuff. Yeah. He might go. He might do the dog track sometime.
A little OTB action.
I don't know what that is.
Off track betting.
So, you know, some guys are out for some quality bro time, and they see a low-flying, unidentified flying object. That is, and with this and a few more details and, you know, some unverified stories and some, you know, weirdness going back enough generations, and Lauren Coleman gets enough here that he can kind of fill a chapter, basically. And then for a long time, you know, you didn't hear about the Bridgewater Triangle. Everyone forgot. It didn't become the new Bermuda Triangle. It didn't become the new Point Pleasant, West Virginia, home of the Mothman. It didn't become the new, what's another great haunted place?
Area 51 or...
It did not become the new Roswell, New Mexico or Area 51. You know why? Because it didn't have a star. It didn't have like a big... But it didn't have a draw, you know? It didn't have something to really pull you in. We need
Skinwalkers.
Skinwalker Ranch is a great example, but even the Skinwalkers, like I'm talking about a Mothman. I'm talking about an El Chupacabra. Yeah. I'm talking about a Slender Man, you know? Like a charismatic a front man who can you know, we can kind of like you know, serves as sort of a mascot or a ringleader for the whole thing.
Right.
And Bridgewater Triangle didn't have that until enter Mr. William Russo. Now, here's the thing to understand. This book came and went, you know, no one noticed, no one cared, no one paid any attention. Then, for God knows what reason, 30 years later, 2013, all of a sudden there's some kind of orchestrated Bridgewater PR push. Because, so first of all, Lauren Coleman's book got a reprinting. And I believe there was new material added to it. Also, there was some TV show. I don't remember the name of it. It's one of those monster hunting shows. They did a whole episode on this. All of a sudden, there's people on TV, people in the media. They're pushing Bridgewater Triangle again. After 30 years, they're making another go of it. Why is this? Who's pulling the levers here? Who's the puppet master behind it all? I don't know if there's such a thing as big paranormal tourist spot industry. Yeah. I don't know if that exists, but whoever it was, they were giving it another go. And this time, they've got something new. Enter Mr. William Russo, a mysterious figure. William Russo is a guy who's got a story to tell. And he says this happened in the 1990s, the early 1990s. And he's walking his dog. It's late at night or early in the morning, probably early in the morning. It's dark out. He's in kind of a woodsy area in Rehoboth or something.
Yeah, all right, that works, yeah.
Hold on, I'm gonna tell you. We don't want to just guess. We want to have facts here.
Rehoboth is near the Hockomock swamp, I think. But yeah, go check that out.
Yeah, you're right about the Hockomock swamp. I want to get the
Rainham. Is it in Rainham?
Oh yeah, it is Rainham. You're correct. It's sometime in the early 1990s. The date actually changes depending on who you're talking to.
Hmm.
I've actually seen everything from like 91 to 95, but that's not important. And it's in Rainham, Massachusetts, right adjacent to the Hockomock Swamp, which is a swamp that features heavily in the biography and times of the Indian chieftain, King Philip. And it's an all-star location within the Bridgewater Triangle. And he's walking his dog. And he sees a kind of a weird guy standing directly underneath a street lamp, right? He's standing there, and it's like he's about 3 feet tall.
Yeah, that's a weird area there. There's a lot of oddballs hanging around.
Yeah, yeah, and they love street lamps.
Uh-huh.
And he's a furry guy, and he's got a weird face, and he's right on the path that Bill and his dog are on. So they're gonna walk right past this befurried fellow. So they get kind of close to it, and they realize that this strange little fellow, he's holding out his hand, he's talking to them. He's saying something to them. Kyle, do you remember what this strange fellow is saying to our friends Bill and his dog?
What cheer?
Iwachu, Iwachu.
He's
saying to the guy, Iwachu, Iwachu, and Bill is sitting there. It's like, what is this fellow saying? And he gets close enough to him, he can see his face, and he's actually done. He's commissioned an artist rendering of this strange creature that you can easily find online. If you just search for William Russo and Pakwaji, mm-hmm. you will see that. And so he sees this guy, and the guy says Iwachu, and that's about it. They go their separate ways and walk past. And this happens in 1994 or whenever. And
early 90s, right?
Early 90s, and for 20 to 25 years, William Russo doesn't say anything. But then in 2013, all of a sudden, he's writing blog entries and he's doing media appearances on this creature that has now been dubbed to be a Pakwaji, which is some kind of Native American creature that may or may not haunt the forest. And so now what we've got here is we've got our El Chupacabra. We've got the star of the show, right? Because that's a pretty, I mean, it's not a great monster sighting. It's certainly no Mothman TNT area. So it's not as good as that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It didn't do all that much, really, in his story. It's just hanging out under a streetlight. It doesn't, like, fly or...
But you know what it does that I think is cool? It talks. Mothman never talked. El Chupacabra never talked. Like,
right.
This is a guy who's actually had a conversation with some kind of, like, weird creature. That's pretty cool. And we've got, like, a good visual element. You know, it's spooky. And also, the other thing that's interesting about it, and this is, like, a kind of a reoccurring motif in, like, these sorts of encounters, it's beckoning to him. You know, it's, like, holding out his hand. It's saying, like, Iwachu, which he later claims is the animal. The guy is speaking English, and it's saying, we want you. We want you, which is a... You know, a haunting idea. Like, we want you. Come to me. Come towards us, and we will run off into the woods together, never to be seen. Who knows what would happen? Mm-hmm. What if he had gone with Mr. Pakwaji man? What would happen? Where would?
And how many people have already gone with the Pakwaji?
That's true, man. Think about all the people that saw this guy and took him up on the offer. We don't know about those because they didn't come back to tell us. So with this, with the Bridgewater Triangle, finally has its all-star attraction, right? Now with the furry little fellow that we're calling a Pakwaji, which means little man in the woods who vanishes, by the way. I just looked it up on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Also, you were telling me this. The Pakwaji is a mysterious being that is featured in the Harry Potter universe as well.
Yeah, it might be extended universe. If you just Google Pakwaji images, mm-hmm. there's a lot of Harry Potter Pakwaji crossover.
Well, I mean, I am on the Pakwaji Wikipedia page, and it says that Pakwajis have been identified by J.K. Rowling magical creatures in the Harry Potter universe in a description on Pottermore. Oh, yeah, you're right. It is That sucks, man. It's not even in the book. It's just like on a website. She's like, oh yeah, there's also puckwudgies. And
go ahead.
No, no, you go on.
I was gonna say it's just like saying Dumbledore's gay or something.
That's what I was gonna say too. It's just like Dumbledore's gay. Also, there's puckwudgies. Just so you know, and get a load of this one, Kyle, because it just gets worse from there. Rowling's use of the puckwudgie and other indigenous lore was heavily criticized for cultural appropriation and colonialism. Oh boy, she's in hot water now.
Yeah, that tracks.
I mean, this is awful. I mean, lady, I mean, come on, it's 2020, you know, George Floyd is killed by police, and you're appropriating Native American cultures. Come on, do better, man. So now that we have our marketing push, we've got our all-star attraction, we've got a re-release of the book, we've got Satanic Killings, we've got the hit podcast, the last podcast on the left, has done an episode on. Now we can go into our full phase, which is the planned FX TV show, apparently, that was on the schedule at some point. There was some kind of TV show that they were gonna do.
Unsolved Mysteries kind of thing.
No, I think it's like an X-Files type of thing. Ritual Triangle TV show. All right, this is from the prestigious Providence Journal. All right, get ready. Mm-hmm. Bridgewater, a supernatural television series about the famed Bridgewater Triangle, is coming to FX. On FX, a real cable network that people have heard, they're going to do a show about the famed Bridgewater Triangle that we all know and love and have definitely, as locals, all heard of, the Bridgewater Triangle. As Deadline reports, FX acquired exclusive rights for the short story, The Bridgewater Triangle, from Brian Miller. I don't know what that is. For television series adaptation, Noah Hawley, creator and executive producer of the TV series Fargo and Legion. I have heard of both of those shows, especially Fargo. I know what Legion is too. It's loosely based on a comic book. I watched a few episodes of it.
Isn't that like a New Mutants kind of thing or something?
Yeah. And Aubrey Plaza is in it too. His production company, 26 Keys Production, will serve as executive producer for the series, with Miller to play a role in writing the pilot. Oh, I thought they meant he was like going to be an actor. Paranormal researcher and cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman first dubbed the paranormal area encompassing 17 towns in southeastern Massachusetts in the 1970s, which he included in his 1983 book Mysterious America, blah, 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 blah. The Bridgewater Triangle has played host to a number of paranormal and supernatural stories. A sampling of reports from inside the triangle include a huge black killer dog. Oh, yeah, we forgot to talk about that. I remember that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, there were some baddie dog was running around barking at people. Spotted in Abington in 1976. Various UFO sightings, only one of worth mentioning, by the way. A ghost named George haunting areas of Bridgewater State University campus. This is the first I've heard of George the ghost.
What's this ghost name?
He sounds cool. The ghost name is George, and he haunts Bridgewater State University campus.
All right.
So be on the lookout, Bridgewater State University students. A man in a dark suit walking up to and straight through the front door of an East Bridgewater antique shop. Okay. A winged creature over 6 feet tall with a wingspan of 8 to 12 feet in Norton. They've got the inside track on this. I watched a whole documentary on this. I didn't hear about that they had their own Mothman. That's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah, and it sounds like they might have a man in black too.
Well, no, he's like a ghost guy, because he starts out as a man in black and then he turns into a ghost. Yeah, so like a man in black ghost. These stories also inspired a documentary. Yeah, this is a documentary I have seen. I watched that. The premiere, October 2013. So they financed a documentary to get this thing off the ground. The upcoming FX series is an apocalyptic horror thriller. Oh, I thought it was going to be like a X-Files type of thing. Set in the area, according to the Deadline article, when a massive paranormal event strikes these 17 communities. That's gonna be a nightmare to keep track of on a drama series. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be like the Game of Thrones of like paranormal shows. Like every town has like some storyline. It turns these idyllic towns upside down and affects the lives of thousands. Three estranged siblings must somehow survive and come survive. Okay.
It's killing people.
All right, I guess they're taking a few liberties here. Hopefully they can survive the doings of the Bridgewater Triangle and come together in the chaos as the only ones who can stop it. I thought this was like an X-Files thing, but it sounds more like The Mist, doesn't it?
Yeah, The Mist or like The Leftovers.
It doesn't sound like The Leftovers at all. Oh, I guess it's an apocalyptic thing, I guess. Yeah, I didn't watch the show, but did it have like ghosts and puckwudgies and UFOs?
No, I just mean like the aspect of like communities trying to figure out how to survive this.
Okay,
like,
but okay. I watched the first season of the show, and the problem with that show, Leftovers, is that the show has no engine, because basically this big thing happened where like half the world just disappeared one day.
Oh, trust me, I'm not a fan of that show at all. I'm just saying.
I thought you were.
The Leftovers? No.
Yeah. Oh, I thought
you hate that show.
Oh, I thought you told me you liked it. But you did watch it.
You watched the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the problem with the show is, so this thing happens, and then in the first episode, it happens in the first scene, and then it jumps forward 3 years later. And it's like everyone's dealing with the repercussions. But the repercussions are that this thing happened. They don't know why. They have no clue what caused it. It's not threatening to happen again, at least in the season I saw. It's not like... they're not like trying to like stop something from happening. So the repercussions are they're all just sad. So the show is just about a bunch of people being sad together over this thing that happened 3 years ago.
Well, the biggest plot motivator is this fear that people will join this cult where they smoke and don't talk.
Oh yeah, yeah. And the mom was a member of that cult, right? Yeah, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah, and like even that, like that people are going to join the cult of people who. Literally, they smoke and they don't talk and they're kind of assholes, and that's what these people are. Like, there's nothing driving. You watch an episode and you're waiting for something to set things in motion, and just it never happens. The whole episode will just feature on a character, and the plot line, the arc of the character is that they're sad, and they're sad about this thing that happened 3 years ago, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. So at the end of the episode, they are still sad. Right. Tune in next week to find out who's sad. That bad show, in my opinion. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about this different show that sounds like it has a lot more of a forward thrust. Because apparently, if these three siblings don't come together, then everyone's going to be killed by the ghost named George and the guy in a suit who walks through a door. Mm-hmm. So look out for that. Miller is being represented. Okay, I don't care about that. So this is a totally different show than I thought it was going to be. I thought this was
honestly.
It sounds like might be worth tuning in to the first episode. This story is from October 9th, 2019.
Yeah, who knows now if it's going to happen.
I feel like the odds are against this show coming to air, to be honest. I don't see much. I don't know. Do we have other shows like this right now? Like there's The Mist, because they turned that into a show. I don't know if that's still on. And then... there's Walking Dead. That's an apocalyptic show. Are there any other apocalyptic shows? There was that Guillermo del Toro thing. I watched a few episodes of that. I don't remember what it's called. The Strain, I think.
Didn't the Wachowskis have some kind of thing? Or
I don't know if that was apocalyptic. It was that Sense8. That was a few years ago. I don't think that they did too many seasons of that either. Okay. Right? I'm not sure if it was post-apocalyptic. Yeah, I mean, I just feel like. No one's heard of this Bridgewater Triangle. It's not enough of a hook. You know, I want to really get pulled in here. You know, I'm not getting pulled in by the puckwudgies and their ghost friend named George. Now, see that to me is a better show. Like, oh, there's a group of kids in the Bridgewater Triangle, and there's mysteries that they have to solve, and they have a friend named George who's a ghost, and he helps them solve mysteries. Yeah. Me, it's a better show.
I like that. He's like just roaming the halls of Bridgewater State University.
Yeah, and everyone's afraid of him. And then one day the main kid meets him and is like, oh, he's actually a friendly ghost, as it were. And he loves to solve mysteries. So, and the first episode is they're solving the mystery of his murder. And then they're like, oh, this works so well. Maybe we can work together in the future. And every week there's a different, they've got to solve the mystery of the Puckwudgie, the mystery of... the ghost of a hitchhiker, the mystery of the big snake, the mystery of the mean dog. Like every week, you know, we can explore a new mystery and all the mysteries are always within like the parameters of like these like three towns in southeastern Massachusetts. And like some episode they're like, oh, this one is actually over in Salem, Massachusetts. Ah, they're not going to go all the way out there. That's a different group of mystery solving kids and their ghosts.
beyond the scope, yeah.
I mean, let me know if there's a mysterious bird sighting in Taunton, Massachusetts. Thank you. I don't think I'm interested. So yeah, so be on the lookout for this Bridgewater Triangle TV show. That my guess is it will not happen.
Another casualty of COVID. What was that show from the 90s where it was like, was it Erie, Indiana?
Oh, hell yeah. I remember Erie, Indiana. That was done by Joe Dante. He was a producer on that.
Right. I feel like we've talked about that a little bit on our show before, just in passing.
In relation to Twin Peaks, probably.
Yeah.
Erie, Indiana was this like show that ran for probably one season. And it took place in this town called Erie, Indiana. And there was like weird things happening in the town, and every episode they would encounter the weird things, and the main character, whose name was Marshall, I remember, and he had a best friend who was like this like short redheaded kid, and he would get some like souvenir or like something, you know, left behind by some paranormal thing, and he would put it in like this like little museum he had in his attic. And so in his attic he had all these shelves of like different paranormal things he'd collected from all the different mysteries he'd solved.
Yeah, and didn't it have that guy, one of those Joe Dante guys who's got like, yes, a funny face, big eyes, mustache?
I'm blanking on the actor's name, but it's the actor who played the dad in the original Addams Family.
Yeah. That guy, yep.
Addams Family dad. Don't give me Raul Julia. It's not Raul Julia. John Astin. We have definitely talked about on the show before because he was also featured in Mr. Boogity.
That's right.
Yeah, that guy, he ran like a... he ran some kind of like comic book store or something.
Yeah,
and like he would like, if he like had trouble with his mysteries, he turned to him for advice. And I don't. He had some kind of like gimmick that he knew about things. And then they introduced this character who was like, I think that was a familiar actor too, but I don't remember who it was. But he like was like, he had like what, he was this kid who had like white hair, and he didn't know his own name. And they didn't know where he came from, and he was like the mysterious character that they introduced. Oh man, Erie, Indiana. Yeah, it was a fun show. So that's your video recommendation from Blocked and Reported. Erie, Indiana, guys, check it out. Kyle, you brought up HBO Max. Can we get an update on the Snyder Cut? Is the Snyder Cut getting released? Fill us in, man.
I think it's kind of stalled out over the last couple weeks.
Wait, really?
I haven't seen any news on the Snyder Cut.
But hold on, there was a big party about how the Snyder Cut was getting released. Are you saying that's fallen through already?
There's been a lot going on in the world. I don't know.
No, Kyle, no. We want the new... Look, we're getting away from that stuff. Everyone else is covering that stuff, but the real news that people want to hear, they turn to me, Logic Guy, and you, Kyle, on Blocked and Reported, to give them the updates, the latest updates on the Snyder Cut. I'm gonna look them up on Twitter right now, because people need to know, goddammit. I'm going to search for the hashtag release the Snyder Cut. The Snyder Cut, so that people can know. Let's see, the latest news on release the Snyder Cut.
Scheduled to be released in 2021.
Okay, next year, the Snyder Cut is being released on HBO Max, exclusive. They are spending between $20 and $30 million, apparently, to, I don't know, fix it, I guess?
I think they're shooting. I think they're going to shoot more footage.
I've heard that said as well, that they were actually doing, and it's funny because the theatrical cut, which I've seen and is a terrible movie, I don't like Zack Snyder, and I don't like Zack Snyder's superhero movies in particular, but I almost have to believe that his version would be an improvement, because the theatrical cut is garbage. But but the whole point was that Snyder was kicked off, probably, or walked away, conflicting reports, and then they brought in Joss Whedon, and they did all these reshoots, including the notoriously hideous reshoots with Henry Cavill with a CG face. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they did all these reshoots, and people don't want the reshoots. They want the original Snyder Cut, and now the Snyder Cut's getting released, and they're doing reshoots. It's like, wait, what? What? How did this happen? I don't understand what's going on here. And here's the other thing that's weird. People have seen the Snyder Cut. Jason Momoa has seen the Snyder Cut. Now, he didn't say what state it was in, so I would assume that there was, like, missing effects and score and color timing and things like that. But this makes it out like there was a lot missing if they're doing reshoots for it. Seems kind of weird. And then there's this other, I haven't followed the story on this, but it sounds like they're making another Henry Cavill Superman movie too. Cause I keep seeing that.
Oh, wow.
I haven't followed the story, but I keep seeing like posts, like usually YouTube videos that I don't click on that Henry Cavill is returning as Superman. I don't know the context. It could just be like a one and done, like cameo sort of thing. I'm not sure. Maybe they mean in additional footage in the Snyder Cut. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they could. I mean, maybe they're thinking that since Marvel has sort of faded out, that they can jump in and fill that market gap.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, the thing is that what Marvel's actually doing is like transitioning to like what's it called?
Series.
Disney Plus.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, Disney Plus. The series on Disney Plus, and like that's what this is basically. Like it's going to be on. It's not going to be in theaters. It's going to be in streaming, and they're just going to basically compete with that. I guess. I don't know. Anyways, the important thing now is we've got to get traction going on release the air cut so that they release the David air cut of Suicide Squad. We need that. Hashtag release the JJ cut. We need to see the JJ Abrams cut of Rise of Skywalker. They left a whole bunch of stuff out. They changed the villain. Billy D. Williams. There's Billy D. Williams footage on the cutting room floor, possibly, according to something I may or may not have read. I'm not sure.
Really?
I literally made that up. We need these films released. You know what it reminds me of? Did you ever see the director's cut of Superman 2, the one by Richard Donner?
Did I see what of Superman 2?
There's a director's cut of Superman 2 by Richard Donner.
I thought it was Richard Lester made that.
See, Kyle, you've been brainwashed by big superhero industry to not even know the history of these films, because in the original incarnation in 1982, Richard Lester signed on for two films, and he started making the second one. So Superman 2 was in production with Richard Donner at the helm. He got fired. They brought on Richard Lester. He did a bunch of reshoots. That movie came out, and for years I was hearing that Superman 2 is a mangled film, and there exists in the vault a pristine Richard Donner cut of this movie that solves all the problems and fixes everything, and it's a perfect movie. And I was just assured that this existed. I personally do not like Superman 2. I don't think it's a very good movie.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
So here's what you missed, Kyle. They released this Richard Donner cut of Superman 2. They released it quite a while ago. I think in like 2006. I think around the time of that Bryan Singer movie. It might have been more recent than that. I don't remember. But at some point they did release it. And what they released was a pretty rough work cut. It had like filler scenes from like test footage and like incomplete scenes. But the crazy thing about it is all of the original problems are, or at least my problems, are still there with the movie. But the film has the same ending as Superman 1. So Superman fucks up again and just turns back time again. And then that's how he fixes everything. Yeah. And then after he does that, after he fucks up, everyone's dead, he hits the reset button to fix everything. And then, you know that scene, this scene always bugs me. He goes back into the diner and he beats up that guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Sorry, you cut out for a second. He goes back what?
He goes back to that diner to beat up that guy. I don't know if you remember Superman 2, but he has his powers. Yeah. And then he starts to fight the guy. Yeah. You're confusing Superman 2 with Superman 3. The scene you're talking about is Superman turns evil and gets drunk in a bar and beats a guy up in a bar because he's evil. Because Richard Pryor turned him evil. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in Superman 2, he decides in order to be able to fuck Lois Lane, he has to give up his superpowers. Otherwise, his sperm will explode her head. So he has to be exposed to red kryptonite or something. And then he's just Clark Kent. He doesn't have superpowers anymore. And him and Lois Lane go to some diner. And Clark Kent, knowing full well that he does not have superpowers anymore, starts a fight with some trucker guy who just absolutely beats his ass and humiliates him. And he's like literally crying at the end. And then he gets his superpowers back. He's like, no, he literally is like, oh man, this sucks not having superpowers. Never mind, I'm going to go get my superpowers back. That's literally like the catalyst to that. And then so that he gets his superpowers back, he fights Zod and the other guys. And then after he's done beating Zod, he goes back to the diner and kicks this guy's ass with superpowers, which is like basically like Like, that's basically committing murder, pretty much. Like, dude, you can't, now that you have superpowers, you can't go back and fight this guy. That's not fair, right? Yeah. Like, so in the Richard Donner cut, they keep that part in where he goes back to the diner and kicks that guy's ass, except Superman rewound time. So that whole thing never even happened. The trucker guy would have been like, who are you? What, excuse me, sir, can I help you? And Clark Kent's just like, yeah, you can help me. And then, like, kicks the shit out of him with his Superman powers. Terrible movie, awful movie. Hopefully, I'm positive the Snyder Cut will be much better. Thank God that we were able to all come together, get this thing out there. Dreams do come true. And now we just need to get that air cut out and things will be good.
There's like podcast editing services. I know. I've heard ads for them.
I have also. What do you think about those?
I'm very like skeptical because I don't know how they could capture the blocked and reported flavor that you have cultivated with your editing.
Right. We have a very specific aesthetic that we use that you can't farm that out. You know, you can't send that to India and get back the logic guy.
Yeah. You got to wonder about the labor practices also, but that's a whole other episode.
The ethical questions abound. Okay, note to self, future Blocked and Reported episode, an in-depth investigation into the practices of, into the ethical labor practices of podcast editing services. And, you know, one thing we could do is we could go undercover, because I have podcast editing experience, so I could get a job in the Indonesia podcast factory. Yeah. And I could go undercover, and then we could do an exhaustive report on our findings. And you're not going to hear that on other podcasts. You're not going to hear that on the Jesse Single, Katie Herzog knockoff podcast that's being bandied about.
Yeah, I don't even know who those people are that you just talked about.
Do we want to cover the fake Blocked and Reported podcast?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So you might have heard there's another illegitimate Blocked and Reported podcast.
I've definitely heard about it. I think I told you.
Yeah, you are the one that informed me about the fake Blocked and Reported podcast run by Jesse Single, who definitely stole the name from me because we are mutuals. He follows me.
So and you definitely told him about episodes that we've done.
I think I might have. I definitely sent out the Tim Pool hit the Hunt one to media people I know. I think I would have sent it to him, so he almost certainly got a DM from me personally informing him about this important new episode of our podcast. So he definitely stole the name from us and is masquerading around as the fake Blocked and Reported with his mean lesbian girlfriend Katie Herzog, and we're not gonna take this sitting down.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. Just take our name like that. I mean, he's got more more visibility.
He's got more clout. That's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, he's got more clout. He's definitely got more clout, more engagement than us. So for him to just like steal part of our product, you know, steal from the little guy, not cool.
Jesse Single, come on the podcast and answer for your crimes, bitch. We are calling you out. This will not stand, sir. This will not stand. This act of aggression, you have declared war on the true Blocked and Reported community. Remember when Ghostbusters was big and they had actually, I won't say stole, I don't know the legal term here, but there was a pre-existing enterprise called it was actually called The Ghostbusters. When that movie came out, they released a cartoon called The Original Ghostbusters.
They were the real Ghostbusters.
No. They released a cartoon called The Original Ghostbusters, and then the Bill Murray, Ivan Reitman movie came out with their own cartoon, and that was called The Real Ghostbusters. Oh, total shade. Yeah. Oh, absolutely roasted, man. This is basically a replay of the great Ghostbuster Wars of the 1980s.
So have you listened to the illegitimate BNR?
I have, yeah. There's one episode where they give us a shout-out, which, you know, whatever. I don't care. This settles nothing.
No.
They did an episode on weird controversy from a few weeks back where someone at the New York Times picked a fight with Christy Teigen, and then another person called Mary Kondo, and everyone got mad at the New York Times writer or something like that. They covered that. Yeah. I know, that's not... Dude, come on. You got we're covering hard-hitting stories like the Bridgewater Triangle. We're actually bringing real stories to people.
This is like the shit that people actually care about.
Yeah. So, I mean it's a disgrace. It's a fake podcast run by I'll use the word terrorists. Podcast terrorists appropriating IP from the little guys. Anyways, we'll keep you abreast of that situation. And we need your support. Give us money. Block them, report them, like and subscribe to us. Yeah, just and spread blocked and reported awareness, please. So important.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that will do it. Kyle, I feel like we usually have some like outro, but I don't remember what it is. Whatever, man, it doesn't matter. Kyle, do you have any news you wanna share? With any on our way out the door, is there any updates on your life you'd like to keep people aware of?
Did I tell you that I'm having a child?
That would be a human baby that you are expecting?
That's right.
That's exciting news, and congratulations, and
thank you.
The best to you and your wife and your coming family, and I'm sure the blocked and reported community. Which does not at all include Jesse Single and or Katie Herzog, send their love to you. And yeah, man, I love you, buddy. And I wish...
Thank you. I love you, too.
Yeah, so we're winding down. Is there anything else you wanna say, Kyle?
No. I mean, I thought we were going to the Bridgewater Triangle.
Yeah. We're on our way. We'll report back about how many big feats and El Chupacabras we've seen.
Oh, okay.
We've got our spectrometer. We've got our orgone detector. We've got our EM meters. We've got our those night vision goggles that they have in the Ghost Hunter shows. So we've come with our full kit, and whatever evidence we collect, we will of course report back. Next time,
right? And maybe we'll have some evidence.
Oh, I mean, how could we fail? We're professional cryptozoologists. I'm sure we're gonna. Just listened to a recovered episode of Blocked and Reported, recorded June 6, 2020. The music was provided, as always, by the Volcano Kings. Additional music by Kevin MacLeod. Blocked and Reported is an independent podcast.